The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
DeMar DeRozan, Lonzo Ball, and the new look Bulls.
I'm proving to myself that I can be happy again playing basketball.
Ball, extra pass, DeRozan this time. It'll be good if it goes.
Compton's in the house.
Woo! Baby!
It was incredible. I can't say much more than that.
DeRozan to win it! Go!
In play to DeRozan, spins, far quarter for the win. Got it again! DeMar DeRozan, Happy New Year! Back-to-back game winners!
Thank God we got DeMar DeRozan on our team.
Well, DeMar DeRozan, having him at the number one seed in 38-21. Zach LaVine hasn't been there the whole time. He has put himself in the conversation as the best basketball player in the world.
Me the MVP?
Mm-hmm.
I came in this season thinking I was the MVP.
Okay.
I had that mentality coming in, saying I'm going to be the best me. And whatever comes with that, whether if it's MVP, king of the mid-range, whatever, I was going to take it.
A six-time All-Star from the Chicago Bulls, who is an undisputed master of the mid-range, DeMar DeRozan.
DeRozan, little sidestep, the king of the mid-range.
He can do that in his sleep. In his sleep.
Looking for DeRozan in the post. He's got it. And he's got 50.
Game time. Game set match.
A 50-piece to put it away in the month of March for DeMar DeRozan.
The Bulls came from 19 down to beat Toronto. I think that's a little tacky, having a little kid of a player on the team that is the visiting screaming when the Raptors are shooting free throws.
In any particular game.
I almost said no because she in school back home. She got to go back to school.
DeMar DeRozan has set and broken Wilt Chamberlain's record. He is the first player in NBA history to record seven straight games of scoring 35 or more points, averaging 50% or better from the field. That's your future Hall of Fame player, DeMar DeRozan. DeMar, marvelous.
Yeah. He's an incredible, I can't speak enough of, you know, what he does for the group, and people see the numbers at the end of games, but it's in huddles, it's halftime, it's in practice, it's keeping his composure, talking to the guys. There's just so many things that he does from a leadership perspective that really impact winning.
DeMar DeRozan has been the king of the fourth.
My stance on when I be here, still the same, but just want to win. Got to go home and see the first round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs. You know, it's frustrating.
DeMar DeRozan, I love you.
He's gone, and we couldn't do nothing about it.
Here goes the one, two, three.
And here we go, Jim. Here we go. Here we go, Jim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show, afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Danny and Matt are off today, so no Parkins and Spiegel, but in for the boys is that guy, Anthony Herron.
Yo.
Big Ant. I am Mark Grody.
Hey now.
We're with you until 6 o'clock here on The Score on the Parkins and Spiegel Show. Another great Goodfellas treatment by Chris Tannehill, taking care of it and reminding you of just how great DeMar DeRozan's 3 years were. And what all of a sudden pops out of my mind is it did feel like he was here longer because he left such a big stamp on this team. You had said earlier about what do we think about this era? Mm. Was this an era of DeMar DeRozan? And my answer to that is no. If you're going to single out a player, what this era was about, this was the Zach LaVine era, and Zach LaVine is still on the team. Mm. I get it. And just because you represent the era doesn't mean that it's a good thing. I think in a very controversial way, this was the era of Zach LaVine. And we can argue about that, like what this has been the era of, but because DeMar has been traded, it's obvious that this era, whatever it was, is breaking up. But I do think that it was the Zach LaVine era, and quite frankly, DeMar DeRozan was an interrupter to it being Zach LaVine's team. And when he first came here, I do remember some people saying be a little bit cautious on DeMar DeRozan because of the game that he plays. He's not a big three-point shooter. And it still was when DeMar DeRozan first joined the Bulls. I enjoyed asking the question of, all right, now that they've got DeMar DeRozan, who's the best player on this team? Who's the go-to guy? 99% of the people that I asked said Zach LaVine.
Right.
And then DeMar came, not only was the best player in the Zach LaVine era, but he also hit huge shots. I mean, Tanny played the back-to-back game-winning threes, which was just like that put him, if he needed to be back on the map, if DeMar DeRozan needed to be put on back on the map, that did it and probably has helped him to get to where he is right now, a very lucrative contract with Sacramento. But I find it difficult to identify or put in perspective what DeMar DeRozan was for the Bulls and how well he and fondly, I mean, of course he's going to be remembered fondly, but how often will people think of DeMar DeRozan 10 years from now when they think about great Bulls players? Will he even fall into that pantheon because the Bulls simply did not win? And not to mention that they didn't win. They were on DeMar DeRozan's watch. Wholly disappointing.
Right.
And it's not, we're not blaming him.
Yeah.
That's the architect.
I mean, it's okay to blame him. He's a part of it, but yeah. I mean,
definitely part of it. And maybe right. The way he played the game, what led to it, and management and upper management never quite adjusted to it. But I find it tricky to know where to, if we're really being objective about DeMar DeRozan, and I guess by nature we're not going to be, nor are the people listening, because you are a fan of DeMar DeRozan, but where does he fall? What is the comp for him in Bulls history? Where does he, because he didn't win, but there have been many players that played well for the Bulls that didn't win. DeMar DeRozan certainly one of them.
And by comparison, you know, Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, the years they spent together, and, you know, it's obviously safe to assume that in the not-too-distant future, the Bulls will move on from Zach LaVine as well. And between the two, the Bulls didn't win big with either of them. There was a stretch. There was a moment in time when the roster was at its peak before the Lonzo Ball injury and Alex Caruso's healthy and shutting folks down, and they're out running and gunning and flying up and down the court and defending, where it just felt like, oh, look at that. They're a number one seed, and maybe this is the, you know, this is at least the beginning of something that could eventually become special. And it went away very quickly, and there was no backup option at a point guard for Ball. But by comparison with Zach LaVine, where he has been this player that it felt like in physical ability and in execution of his individual game, it seemed like the sky's the limit for Zach. And so there have been these astronomical expectations for what he could become. Whereas when DeMar DeRozan got here with the Bulls, he was already on the other side of 30, and he just wasn't a player at that point in his career that had those same expectations any longer.
No.
Most of us thought we had seen the best of DeMar DeRozan before he joined up
in Toronto.
With the Bulls.
In Toronto, not
exactly.
Even San Antonio. Almost
right.
Felt like as much as it was revealed in his game for the better in San Antonio, like he'd kind of set the tempo for what he became with the Bulls. Like, yeah, like you kind of fell off the elite NBA map for a while, and it was like, okay, we're
even though he had been a national team player before that and was certainly one of the most well respected players in the sport, but just like, all right. You make this transaction, what are we really getting from that? It better be Zach leading the way here, because there's no way DeMar DeRozan can still be that level of player. And then he came here and has probably drastically outperformed the expectations for what a lot of folks had set for him in coming to Chicago. The acquisition of DeMar DeRozan was panned by a lot of very prominent people,
sure.
Just thinking, what are the Bulls really going to get from him at this point in his career? And where Zach LaVine is the opposite end of that spectrum with this sort of unrealized potential. The talent is obvious. There's no reason to even think he's not necessarily even committed to improving. You can make the case he has gotten better in his time with the Bulls, but there have been injuries. There's been frustration. And a lot of the frustration is because you see the immense physical talent that's there, and it doesn't lead to wins. There is something missing in the game of Zach LaVine that hasn't allowed him to be the lead dog. You know, if my impression, if Zach LaVine goes somewhere else with infrastructure that doesn't require as much of him, his talent will shine that much more without having to be the lead dog. But here in Chicago, he needed to be that. He was the best option the Bulls had for that, and it never came to fruition. So for DeMar DeRozan, he'll be far more fondly remembered on the way out of town than Zach LaVine. And I think largely because, yes, a lot of those great moments that Tanny had in his Goodfellas treatment there, That's legit. People felt that. Not just Chicago fans, but the Chicago Bulls mean so much. Like I'm wearing one of the shirts I got in Australia. Over in Australia, there's Bulls hats, Bulls jerseys everywhere. Mm. The Bulls mean a lot in basketball to the entire planet. So when DeMar DeRozan is hitting game winners as the Bulls are actually winning and doing good things a couple of years ago, the basketball world felt that for a moment in time. So on the way out of town, DeMar DeRozan would be viewed far more fondly than Zach LaVine, because Zach LaVine is viewed as a player who hasn't been able to achieve anywhere near the expectation that's been set for him.
So who is the comp? Whether it is a ex-Bulls player, or if there is a comp on another Chicago team sport guy who, and I don't even know what the, like, guy who wasn't necessarily supposed to be the guy, but he became the guy and became the number one on a team. Like, that doesn't happen very often. Or just a guy, or if we're going to qualify what it is, a guy who just came in and just for a short period of time just lit it up. Mm. He was here for 3 years, DeMar DeRozan, doing great things. Now, it didn't stay at the Wilt Chamberlain level, and there were moments that were not all good for DeMar DeRozan, but you talk about making the most of your time. The only comp that's coming to my head right now is a different player and all of that. I take all of that into account, but just a guy who just was crazy good for a while, made his way through town, and then left. Ben Gordon. Ben Gordon, who was, and I get it, like different stuff. Like Ben Gordon was a bench player for a lot of the time that he was here, but he would come in and just make shot after shot after shot. And you wondered about Ben Gordon. Is this guy a superstar? Can that guy lead your team? Is he really all of this? And then obviously he goes to Detroit at the end, was at the end of his rookie contract. And now you have DeMar DeRozan after 3 years with the Bulls, after just lighting it up, saying, okay, thanks everybody. This has been great. He does his bows on the way out of town. Mm. That's it. Sorry, things couldn't have gone better, but you guys are going to love me all the way. Because it's tricky, man. He's gone, and yes, I think Bulls fans will always root for this guy. When Sacramento is in town next year, DeMar DeRozan will get a standing ovation. Mm. There's no doubt my mind. So, but yeah, I am wondering from you and from texters, 312-644-6767, if there is a comp, and really defining what the qualifications are for somebody like DeMar DeRozan, just because it was just such a short time period of time.
So I think that for DeMar, and I've got a comp for each. I've got a comp for DeMar and I've got a comp for Zach. My comp for DeMar is Julius Peppers, because I think that you look at a guy who had already been a marquee performer, a Hall of Fame level performer before coming here to Chicago. And his arrival was met with, the arrival of Julius Peppers, because of what he was still at that point, being viewed as a guy who's maybe on the back end of his prime, but certainly still a prime level performer. But one of the best in the sport, the physical attributes. Julius Peppers was viewed as like this Martian. So, I don't think DeMar DeRozan, as a pure athlete at his position, is viewed in the same echelon as Julius Peppers. But the production that had been there throughout his career, a perennial Pro Bowl caliber player, a guy who was already on a Hall of Fame trajectory, then comes here to Chicago for kind of a brief moment in time, is still very productive in the few years he's with the Bears, and then has a final act elsewhere and continues to perform well. So we'll see what the final act of DeMar DeRozan ends up being. But he's a player who was very productive here with the Bulls, that there wasn't a lot of team success that was associated with it, but showed up already being a well-respected player, an extremely productive player, and then came here and continued to be productive, even though he wasn't necessarily viewed as a guy who was kind of the key piece of any big-time wins that the Bulls had during his time here. Now there's going to be another sort of act of DeMar DeRozan's career. Just like when Pep left town, there was another act that remained in his career after he was done.
Love that. That's a great comp, because you're right. And I would say that Julius Peppers' best days were with the Carolina Panthers. Like, he was very good with the Bears. You could even make a case that he was the best player on the Bears' defense for a year. I don't know if I would make Peppers that guy. I still think Brian Urlacher was probably the best player on that defense, but they respected the hell out of him and loved everything that he did. But, yeah, for sure, like, you did not get the superstar when you got Julius Peppers. And there are a couple people that are agreeing with you. I want to hear your LaVine comp, but I want to read some of the text messages. messages too on the DeMar comp. 20, let's see, easily Brandon, a couple people saying Brandon Marshall. That he came in and he was
on the field, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously Brandon Marshall ran afoul of some people off the field in the locker room, maybe to a certain extent, but
he was expected to be good.
Brandon Marshall was a younger player, more in his prime than DeMar DeRozan while he was here with the Bulls.
No doubt about it.
It's whack to
me. Here's a great one. Here is a great one from a texter, 815. Jake Arrieta, for sure, wasn't supposed to be the guy in 2014 and quickly became the guy. Wasn't supposed to be the guy in 2015 either. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be John. All of a sudden, John Lester ain't the ace
now
anymore, because that's a great one. Because nobody expected Arrieta.
Arrieta was a part of a couple of the greatest Cubs teams of all time, though. And so that's where, you know, as an individual talent, kind of a brief moment in time, I think the comp holds up.
Yeah.
I would include, like, at least my Peppers and DeRozan comparison, partly is that, you know, Bears didn't make a Super Bowl, but at least while Pep was here, Bears didn't win a Super Bowl in the Julius Peppers time frame. So I don't know, like Arrieta.
I think best of the true spirit. I think of the true spirit of the question. Like, that's a home run right there, Jake Arrieta, for a guy who it wasn't a nobody. Mm-hmm. Like he before, and the texter did properly point out 2014. That was a terrific year too. It wasn't just like the previous years building up to it.
Yeah.
There was some evidence that Jake Arrieta could be really good. No evidence to suggest he would dominate the way he did in 2015 and for a lot of 2016 as well. But I think in terms of, this guy might be better than that guy. DeMar DeRozan might actually be way better than Zach LaVine. Lester is not as good as Jake Arrieta. Mm-hmm. I think in the true spirit, that one, that's top of my list right now.
I like that. That's a good one.
Tony Amonte is one. I don't remember what the expectations were for Tony Amonte, but he was a terrific Blackhawk, no doubt about it. Johnny Knox. I love when we can bring up Johnny Knox. Johnny Knox.
Just because.
Well, now, Johnny Knox was a former Chicago Bears wide receiver. People don't know. Johnny Knox was, a fifth or sixth round pick? There were no expectations for Johnny Knox other than the dude could straight up fly, and then he almost died on the field. But Knox probably falls in the category of overachieved, I suppose, considering what he was working with, where he came from, where he was drafted, and all that. But yeah, it's tough because it's hard to know what qualifies as the comps. Like, what are we actually putting into the mix to come up with a player, whether basketball or anywhere, that is like that?
Yeah, several different factors within that. You want my Zach LaVine comp?
I do want your Zach LaVine comp.
All right. So this, to me, I feel like is a more on the button, on the nose comp than we could even come up with for DeMar DeRozan. My comp with Zach LaVine is Jay Cutler. I feel like the career of Jay Cutler in his time
The
Bears.
That's so good.
He came over from Denver as this uber talented quarterback, had just come off of making what ended up being his only Pro Bowl, but it was viewed as like, all right, he's coming here to Chicago to be that piece that helps the Bears ascend into that next stratosphere. And the talents of Jay Cutler were a huge part of what made him so frustrating, because he was one of the most physically gifted quarterbacks of his era. There were things, I used to even say it back then, there were things that Aaron Rodgers would do on the field. Let's say probably one of the few other quarterbacks who could make that throw from that body angle with that type of mobility was Jay Cutler. Like, such a physically gifted talent who had moments of sort of peak production, and you could see the highlights pop off the screen, but it was never consistently achieved. And there were even, you know, a couple of playoff runs that the Bears made with Jay Cutler as a part of them, but it never felt like Jay Cutler was the guy who got to the point of achieving at the level that anyone around expected a player of his capabilities would be able to achieve at.
That's a great comp. I absolutely love that, because and neither of those guys, or an issue both had, was they both didn't really fit in with the team concept.
Mm.
Like, Jay Cutler was going to do what Jay Cutler was going to do. You know, F you Martz, man. He was going to, hey, man. Ford, you throw into coverage with Ford, he was going to do that. He was going to throw an awful interception at some point in time. He was going to do it his way. Yeah. And talk about team and talk about the concept and talk about his offensive lineman. Same thing with Zach LaVine. It's, mm-hmm. I love that because he just did not that they were, well, at least in the case of Zach LaVine, he seems to be a pretty good guy who's down with the team
concept.
And seems
to know the answers to the test, but for whatever reason, still can't pass it.
But his game just does not fit with the team concept, as crazy as that sounds, playing in a team sport. But we will we'll go through more comps of DeMar DeRozan. I love some of the texts that are coming in, 312-644-6767. A little bit later on, we'll talk competitive eating, because tis the season to talk about competitive eating. It is the Parkins and Spiegel Show. Show with Big Ant Mark Grody filling in on the score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
I'm sorry about this afternoon. Please, everyone be quiet.
Afternoons on the score.
Parkins and Spiegel Show, along with Anthony Heron, I'm Mark Grody. We are filling in for the boys today and tomorrow. And we've been trying to put DeMar DeRozan in perspective, Chicago style, figuring out who the comps may be, who it reminds you of, whether it's player or era, and trying to qualify to that he becomes the guy on a team and wasn't necessarily supposed to become the guy as it should have been. As I said, this is the Zach LaVine era that is ending, not the DeMar DeRozan era, even though DeRozan was the better player over this era. Also, you know, just in qualifying it, being great over a short stay with the Bulls or with a Chicago team and did unbelievable things during that short stay. We've had lots of good text messages coming in with guys that fit that description. I'm just looking here at the top. Rick Sutcliffe. Sutcliffe is my comp. Yeah, I mean, he did great things in probably an unexpected fashion really quickly in 1984 when he won 15 straight games and went 16-1 and ended up being a Cy Young Award winner. Here's another one. You had a great comp with Zach LaVine. You said Jay Cutler, which I buy. No argument. Zach LaVine, Big Ant, equals Alfonso Soriano.
Oh.
That's pretty good. See, big numbers.
Yeah. And I wonder if, because actually I was about to say Alfonso Soriano in relation to, in comparison with DeMar DeRozan, but I guess he was probably with the Cubs longer, probably significantly longer than DeRozan was with the Bulls, I guess. Because for me, I view Soriano as kind of this brief kind of moment in time coming off of the heels of Sammy and everything else, and then suddenly he kind of became the dude. But
he was around forever, though. Like Sammy,
maybe it was just peak Soriano was kind of the few years, but he was really around for longer.
That's a great point. Like Soriano had one of those contracts. I think he had a 7-year deal, I want to say, that they signed him to, and I remember how excited Aramis Ramirez was, but they signed him to that deal. He became one of those guys where every year we're like, yep, still 3 years left on Soriano's deal.
Right.
Still another 7 years left on that deal.
So yeah, Zach would probably be a better comp. I was going to utter it at any point in the next few moments. So I was going to utter it more in comparison with DeMar, but he was with the Cubs significantly longer than DeMar was with the Bulls.
No doubt about it. Yeah. Another good one too, although he was a great player, Marian Hossa. Mm. You know, he comes in and they expected him to be terrific, but he became great. And he took I think it was 2009 when that trade went down, just before they started winning cups, like 2009 and like the Globetrotters. And I think his first game, if I recall correctly, was against the San Jose Sharks, and he had like two goals or something like that. And that was when the fancy Blackhawks were born. Remember how Joel Quenneville's one thing with the Blackhawks of that era, every once in a while he had to ramp down the fancy. Remember? Like that was always the one thing. Okay, we appreciate what you're doing out there, but there were so many high-skilled players that he eventually had to ramp that down. But I think Marian Hossa definitely was a good comp. How about Lance Lynn?
Okay. Yeah, for DeMar?
Yeah, because he came in.
Right.
He was great, earned another contract, kind of rose to the top of
staff. Yeah, on the back end of his prime at that point. But, like, man, watch him eat these innings up. And that's exactly what DeMar does, right? Like, DeMar is always there and available. And didn't he lead the league in minutes last season? Like, he's just kind of always available and on the court and productive. And for that brief moment in time, Lance Lynn was that until he started to break down and he was not that anymore. But, yeah, for a couple of years, you got Lance Lynn just as this guy who only had a couple of pitches. You know, he wasn't going to be a guy who was going to hit triple digits, but he was going to give you that fastball in a few different spots to kind of paint the zone. And I like that.
Lance, he was going to be more. He was going to be more valuable than you thought, because nobody didn't think that DeMar DeRozan wasn't going to be good.
Right.
With the Bulls, there was an expectation. It's it's DeMar DeRozan, but to take it to that level and to educate us on his game, because. You know, DeMar DeRozan, obviously, in this era of the NBA, still has a very unique game, the monster of the mid-range, which I think was a stamp that really got loud with the Bulls. Like, I'll say that part of his legacy, the mid-range monster, like the master of the mid-range, like all of that came out. So to have been a unique player for this time in the NBA, I mean, that's just another check in his corner for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the... I don't know. We haven't gone back to my comp between Ryan Poles and where we were at with Rick Hahn leading into 2021.
Oh, yeah.
Still feel very strongly about that. I think that's even better than my Zach Jay Cutler comp. But
you
guys were a little more.
You won't let that go.
Yeah, because I just think it was. I think it was an excellent comp.
You're still feeling that. Yeah. Well, you said that Rick Hahn was a genius. Like, and just like the fact that you threw that word around.
Yeah, I
threw me off.
I never called Rick Hahn a genius. The baseball world viewed Rick Hahn as a genius going into 2021. We now know a few years later that it all fell flat on its face. But going into 2021, folks thought Rick Hahn had pulled off this masterful performance of how you tear it down and build it back up. And watch, they're going to show the Cubs how you sustain this thing. And there was a lot
because of the long-term contract.
And acquiring all this young talent, you get rid of the old guys, you bring in talented young guys, you sign them young, you get them to the major league level, you develop them there, you got young arms and young bats. There's all this stuff that a lot of folks were assuming was going to go really well for the Sox for a long time. Just turns out we see now, none of it went well from that point.
All right,
but leading into 2021, a lot of folks thought Rick Hahn had pulled off one of the great rebuilds, and we were in the infancy of watching one of the great rebuilds we had seen.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay, I'll answer.
What is more disappointing to you, the where they are now Cubs core, winning core, or where they are now White Sox core under your genius Rick Hahn? What's more stunning? The downfalls of these guys. Like where they are, like from Javier Baez, for example.
Yeah,
is a
like
big
based off
nothing.
What period of time are we
talking? Oh, Chris Bryant.
So the Cubs World Series
core.
Okay.
Yeah, forget now.
Yeah.
The core is now and like the Chris Bryant downfall, the Javier Baez downfall for Major League Baseball, or you go to the White Sox and the expectation that was Eloy Jimenez and that became Eloy Jimenez. Yoan Moncada, like what we thought he represented and what Tim Anderson DFA'd.
Yeah.
So, and there's success stories still. I mean, I think that Luis Robert obviously is still a brewing success story for the White Sox. Kyle Schwarber, if we're looking at Cubs core, still a success story. Anthony Rizzo, to a large degree, has succeeded since his Cubs days, but there's so many more examples of or loud examples of guys who did. So I'm asking, like, what is more surprising, more disappointing? The guy, all those guys that you said Rick Hahn signed to the long term deals and now not doing as much for you, or the Cubs, and we were all PO'd that they broke the whole thing up, or a lot of people were, that Jed Hoyer just started trading guys left and right at the trade deadline. Everybody must go. But now he looks, I mean, not that he's done much to date with the team that he has now, but at least with that part, I don't know if he's vindicated, but he was somewhat right with not giving out crazy contracts to some of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't say quickly, but I 100% understood the hesitation with Chris Bryant because it just seemed like he reached his peak so early in his career. And his peak was amazing, but I understood the Cubs not wanting to pay him $250 million about Javi and the holes in his game that didn't improve. That made sense. Really, the only guy at this point that I would say, all right, the Cubs really missed out at Kyle Schwarber and what he's become and the consistency that we've seen from him as a power bat, why he didn't consistently achieve that here. Because, I mean, when you look at his last couple of seasons with the Cubs, you saw the potential that was there, but it's like, all right, how do you consistently keep that in the lineup before the DH is a consistent thing in the National League? Does it fit here? Does he need to go to the other league? All right, he's improving on defense. Does it make sense? There was a lot of the Kyle Schwarber conversation where a lot of folks could see him becoming this at the plate. But did it make sense for the Cubs with where they were at with things? But that's the main player that I would say he's an even better version of himself elsewhere than he was with the Cubs.
That's true.
Right.
That's a really good way of putting
it. Most of the rest of them, their best days were here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And now they've gone elsewhere and they haven't necessarily gotten better. So with that being said, at least that group won at a high level.
Yes.
They won divisions.
Yes.
They won a World Series.
They won the damn World Series. So, they went to three straight NLCSs.
Yeah. The White Sox, because of those incredibly high expectations that had been set. And I think part of it was riding the wave of everyone watching what the Cubs tear down and rebuild became, and the feeling that maybe the White Sox were somehow even going about it in a more educated manner. In a more nuanced
manner.
Definitely
different manner. You're right. The key to it being the long-term contracts, which the Cubs actually gave one of those to Anthony Rizzo, but it was dirt cheap.
Yeah,
and
right.
Rizzo probably was, because he wasn't at that moment, wasn't necessarily betting on himself.
Yeah. And so you think about not only what the lineup was, but pitchers. Like, I mean, they paid big money to Dallas Keuchel, and then he was terrible while he was with the Sox.
He was good for a while.
Yeah, I mean, for a little while. But then he became terrible trying to figure out how do we get rid of Dallas Keuchel. But like Lance Lynn, you know, became really good. Lucas Giolito obviously had multiple seasons of showcasing his talent. And Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech and Liam Hendrick. There was a lot of arms here too. So it wasn't only about the lineup that was there, but there were a lot of arms and several of them, like Carlos Rodon, young arms that you're thinking maybe the Sox are going to have a chance to build around, and just none of it ever amounted to anything. There was so much talent seemingly everywhere, and then they add Liam Hendricks, so you get a closer, and it amounted to bupkis.
Yeah.
So the White Sox, to me, that era that we're now kind of coming out of, I guess, that period in time, that window that we thought they had entered, that to me, what we're now seeing torn apart is far more disappointing than the Cubs.
Two more comps here I have that are great on the text line. DeRozan comp from the 815, Jim Thome. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Because he was really good.
Right.
And he was great White Sox citizen.
I mean, he was either going to strike out or hit it a mile, but it was fun.
Oh, no,
and it
absolutely.
Was a lot of power.
No,
yeah.
There was something there. Something was in that bat for Jim Thome for sure.
Right.
But the Sox were a colossal disappointment in those years, not being able to build on the winning the World Series. And obviously 2008 rolls around. And you got the great John Danks performance and the Jim Thome homer, so that he was part of at least significant events. So I like that one. And then somebody else here said Khalil Mack. That's a pretty good example of a guy not being around long, but coming in and just destroying everything while
he was
here.
Wasn't here for a long time. He was here for a good time.
He was here for 2018. Let's just be honest. That's what it was. Khalil Mack was here for 2018, and it was a blast of a season for Khalil Mack. He was at least in 2018. See, this is where the comp goes bad, because DeRozan was consistent and good every single year, the 3 years that he was with the Bulls. That wasn't the case with Khalil Mack, mostly not his fault, it felt like, because of injury.
He also wasn't viewed as past his prime yet.
No, he was
Khalil
not.
Khalil Mack, when the Bears signed him.
He was 26 when the Bears got him.
Right. He was viewed as a guy who was entering his prime as one of the two best defensive players in football, and he immediately showed that off no practice time on national television against the Packers. So I'd say that, you know, again, like, you know, you can kind of put some nuance into the comp, but for DeMar DeRozan, being a guy who was longer in the tooth when he got here, and then outperforming expectations for a brief period of time, that's where I would say it's not apples to apples with Khalil Mack.
When we return, we can read a few more of those. But also, the winner this year of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest was local, from Chicago, grew up here, lives here. And we had, this weekend, Gabe Ramirez and I had Patrick Bertoletti on the air to talk, and apparently there were some amusing things that were spotted in that interview, which we will hear coming up next. It's the Parkins and Spiegel Show on The Score.